Welcome back to episode 119 of the Chaos Ball Podcast. Now, I considered not even recording this. I considered just leaving the team be, but I can't do that. It has been, it'll be 12 days since I last recorded when this comes out. And good Lord, what a 12 days it's been for me personally, for Mariners baseball, which is ultimately what this podcast is about. The last two pods have come at such different times and stages of the Mariners season. September 5th was the most recent one, and then August 14th. And August 14th, the vibes were high. They had won six in a row in their home stand. They weren't playing great against the Orioles, but then they just went on an absolute stinker to finish the month of August. I record in September, the start of September, fresh off getting swept by the Rays. The vibes were incredibly low amongst me, the fan base, the team. But I left that podcast with some optimism because it's baseball. And as quick as a team can play like the worst team you've ever watched, like the Mariners for those 2 weeks, it can turn as quickly, it just snap your fingers. Like, you can just all of a sudden win a bunch of games because baseball is actually insane. Sometimes all it takes is a little bit of luck. Sometimes all it takes is for the whole team to grow mustaches. Sometimes you need an Etsy witch to uncurse the team. And that's exactly what happened. All of those things. That pod dropped on the 5th. They lose to the Braves in a pretty frustrating game. And it's like, oh, here we go again. Start to another tough week of Mariners baseball. And then no, Saturday, everything changes. Overnight, a Mariners fan on Twitter, his @ is not Bob Ross, spelled with a couple zeros and numbers in there. He paid an Etsy witch, which I didn't know was a thing. I was not aware of witches working out of Etsy, but it's a thing. He said, quote, unfuck the Mariners, and holy hell, has it worked? The Mariners social has picked up on it. I think MLB socials have picked up on it. The Etsy witch has gone viral, and I think his name is Steven, has also gone viral. He paid the Etsy witch, and they scored 28 runs to win that series against the Braves. They're 9-0 since then. I'm recording this before they kick off their last road trip of the season in Kansas City, and then they go to Houston. Huge road trip. But they're 9-0 since the Etsy witch. They're also 9-0 since I got engaged. I got engaged on the 6th, and they won the game that night, and then they haven't lost since then. And I want to keep riding this high. Etsy witch, mustaches, engaged, all of it. I want all of it. I want them to keep winning. Sometimes that's all it takes. Baseball is insane. Sometimes you need to pay an Etsy witch. So that is the significant thing that has happened for Mariners baseball since the last pod. They have catapulted up the standings. They're a half game above the Astros in first place for the AL West. They're 3.5 games ahead of the Rangers. No longer in the wild card, although if they were on the wild card, they'd be tied with the Boston Red Sox for the second wild card spot. Yankees and Red Sox are also kind of limping to the finish line. So are the Tigers, low-key. Like, the Mariners are the Tigers are within the sights of the Mariners for seeding. I don't think they're going to chase the Blue Jays or catch the Blue Jays. I don't think there's any chance of that. They're 6 back of them. But they're only 3 back of the Tigers. So if they keep riding this mustache Etsy witch bender that they're on, and let's say win the AL West, they're not resigned to be the 3 seed, it appears. They could totally catch the Tigers, who the Tigers are still a good team, but again, limping to the finish line. Like, the Mariners are by far the hottest team in baseball. The 9-0 stretch that they've been on, they have scored the most runs in baseball over that stretch, 66 runs. Not shocking, they had the best team WRC plus over that time, 148. The starting pitching has gotten back on track, you could say. They have 11th best ERA in ball over that time, tied for 10th best actually with Boston, 3.24. That's better than where they've been in the season. Like, there's just been better starts from guys who have been limping. And the bullpen is really the story here. The bullpen over this time has thrown 38 innings, which is the third most, tied for the third most in baseball over that span, which you usually associate as a really bad thing. And it's because they've had to throw in some really crazy extra innings games. They've had a couple starts where the starters have been good, but just haven't gone deep enough into games. So you look, and they have a 0.24 bullpen ERA over that time. The teams around them with as many innings, the Angels are in first with 39 and a third, 5.26 ERA. Rockies are in second, 38 and a third, 5.4 ERA. The Rays are tied with the Mariners for most innings over that span with 38 and have 4.03 ERA. Then there's the Mariners, 0.24. Just incredible, an incredible run for the bullpen. Because they haven't been blowing teams out. Like the Etsy Witch High they rode with the Braves has not been why they're winning these games. Like, they beat the Cardinals 4-2, 5-3, 4-2. Angels 7-6, 2-1, 5-3, and then on Sunday they did crush them 11-2. But it hasn't been like the offense has been great. A lot of the run scoring leading the league came from that Braves series and the one Angels game. Those rest of those games have just been 2-1 run victories off the back of the bullpen, and everyone has been good. Even Jose Castillo threw three phenomenal innings for the Mariners and isn't even on the team anymore. He got DFA'd because they needed to bring up Ligamina to eat some innings on Sunday. The bullpen has been incredible. So that is that is the main reason they have managed to string this many wins together, because that the homestand, it wasn't amazing offensively. It was a solid homestand. They scored enough runs to hand it off to the bullpen that's just on an absolute bender. So that has been just phenomenal to watch. Everyone in the bullpen cook. Everyone. But it's come together wonderfully. The back of the pen looks great. I don't want to project that the middle of the pen is going to be this elite if there's October baseball in the future for this baseball team, but they look pretty damn good. There's been plenty of bright spots on the offense too. It's not I'm not underselling the total offensive contribution. Most everyone has been, like, for the month of September, really solid, I would say. Jorge Polanco especially, like Julio has continued to just be incredible in the second half. He's, you know, he's a good baseball player. Crazy that people continue to doubt him when he looks like merely a good baseball player. And I'll talk about Julio a little later in this episode. Jorge Polanco's on a couple crazy streaks. I think he's on 9 games in a row with an extra base hit. I think he's 7 games in a row with a double, which is incredible. I tweeted something out the other night when he had his, I think he had 3 doubles in a game. Was that like Sunday? But Jorge Polanco hit 11 doubles all of 2024. And just in the last 9 games, which includes that Angels game, he hit 11 doubles. Just, he is playing himself into a pretty decent payday. I really don't want to talk about the 2026 Mariners. I want to focus on this year's team. But the offseason is going to be pretty fascinating for a lot of different reasons. Jorge Polanco is one of the main, like, I have no idea what his value is. He's been pretty much a DH only, but he's mashed. Not all year. It hasn't been linear. He was Barry Bonds in April, had a couple down months there in the middle of the year, and then second half has just been, has turned it back on and has been incredible for this team. He is just seeing it so well up there at the plate. We had, what else was good on offense? We had Leo Rivas hit a walk-off home run, his second career home run, and it was a walk-off, and the first baseman was playing 10 feet away from him expecting a bunt because there was a zombie runner on second and extra innings. Cal tied Mickey Mantle's switch hitting home runs record, which is awesome. Switch hitting is so difficult, so I think doing anything that is a record for switch hitting is super impressive. JP has been back to being just a good player at the plate after being dreadful for a while in the month of September. He's been great. I mean, pretty much, okay, I'm not going to say everyone. Cole Young, Luke Rayleigh, Garver, even Gino, they've struggled in September. But the lion's share of the offense has been good. So this team is back to mashing, most of them. And what they have done is they've played their way into controlling their own destiny here. And the schedule does kind of favor them as well, because they're now, they're half game up in the division with, well, how many games left? 12 games left. So 12 games left. 6-game road trip, 6-game homestand. They entirely control their own destiny. Leading the division with 12 games left, they have all of the power in the world to go on and win this division. It has never been more winnable for this team than right now, like in the DePoto era, and especially in this competitive window that opened basically in 2021. The 2025 division race, there's never been an easier division to win. Now, it's not going to be easy, but it's never been easier. Now, they play the Royals, which is cursed. They go to Kansas City, which is actually terrible. I can't think of a worse place to send the Mariners, who are on an incredible heater, than Kansas City, genuinely. It is a cursed place to play baseball games. We've seen it time and time again the past three seasons against this team. But then they go to Houston for 3 games, and that's massive. That could, I don't think they'll be in position to like clinch the division at that point. Obviously, there are 6 games after that, but that could end up winning them the division. Like, if they take 2 of 3 in Houston and then handle their business against the Rockies, like, you never know, that could be the division locked up then and there. Like, you have the ability to put distance between you and the Astros. Now, the Rangers aren't out of it. Why also the destiny is in the Mariners' hands, is in their own hands, is because the Astros and the Rangers play each other this week. They start this series Tuesday as well. Again, this is before the games are happening, so I don't know what is happening in that series, but I believe they play a 3-game set this week while the Mariners are in Kansas City. So I think you gotta root for the Rangers, right? I think we have to root for the Rangers. They're 3.5 back. I'm not quite scared of them. The Astros aren't an amazing baseball team, but they're still the Astros. Yordan just snapped his ankle in half, which is brutal. But that's part of why there's not going to be a better year than right now to win this damn division, to break the 24 season drought that it is. So they're here, and it's real nervous hours because they haven't been in first this late in the year since 2001. So that's a little nerve-wracking. And this, I just don't like the vibes of the schedule. Like, going to Kansas City and then Houston feels terrible, and then finishing the year against the worst team in baseball and one of the worst teams of all time in the Colorado Rockies also scares me, because they should sweep that series. It will be malpractice if they don't, but that's not how baseball works. And then you get the Dodgers for the last 3 games of the season, and the Dodgers still are kind of pussyfooting around a little bit. They, like, the Padres haven't been playing amazing baseball either, but the Dodgers might have to beat the Mariners at least once, quite possibly twice, to lock up the NL West. because they might only win like 90 games, which is crazy. So it's going to be a stressful 2 weeks. It's going to be a very stressful 2 weeks. I hope they can. I don't even know what can the Antsy Witch come to Kansas City? Would that reverse the absolutely cursed energy that is in that ballpark? I hope. Maybe. I don't know. Because we're at a point. What if they win out? Does the Antsy Witch just have to throw out first pitch of a wild card or divisional series? I feel like we need to get her down here. I think she lives in Canada. So I think we probably need to get her down here. Looking at the playoff odds, and I'll get out of this very long opener just talking about where the Mariners are at, but that's where we're at in the year, is this type of just like where we're at. There's 2 weeks left. It's a sprint. This is when the marathon turns into an all-out sprint. The Mariners currently 97.2% chance to make the playoffs according to Fangraphs. They now officially have 64% chance to win the division, which is almost double the Astros. That has flipped completely on its head the past week. 11% chance to win the World Series, which is they have the highest odds in the American League to win the World Series with 11.1. That's 0.1% more than the Blue Jays. That scares me. It scares me that it's that high. So playoff odds is the thing that makes me not trust computers the most, I swear to God. But that's where the Mariners are at. You knew this. This is where the Mariners are at. Like I said, I couldn't resist doing this podcast because they've been playing so well. This was a good time. I'm out of town this weekend. I don't know if I'm going to pod before the season's over unless something crazy happens. I mean, maybe before the final series, but I might just let the season play out and just see what happens. But some milestone watch for our two sweet, sweet homegrown boys, Cal Raleigh and Julio Rodriguez. Cal Raleigh is on the verge of breaking more records. Like I said, he tied Mickey Mantle's home run record for switch hitter, which I think Mickey Mantle was pretty good at baseball. Last time I checked, he was all right. The only reason I know that is because people were calling Mike Trout Mickey Mantle a decade ago. No, I'm just kidding. But Cal's on the verge of breaking that record, which I'm inclined to believe he's going to break. There's 12 games left. I think he's probably going to do it in the Kansas City series. He is once again looking like an absolute animal. This month, I think his WRC plus, now I completely lost the number. Oh, it's right there. 170, same as Julio's for the month of September. He's not striking out as much this month. He has 4 home runs. He is just back on track after a brief little slump there. He looked tired. Which is fair. He's hit a lot of home runs and caught a lot of baseball games this year, so it's understandable that he's a little tuckered out. But he's back. He's been back on track, which is great. That is kind of exactly what you needed him to do this month, despite the rest of the offense being pretty sound. I think you want him to be incredibly frightening up there for every pitcher going into late September and then October baseball, knock on wood. So he's there. He's encroaching on Ken Griffey Jr.'s single-season home run record, 56. Which I know he did in back-to-back years. We'll see if Cal can do that, which would be unheard of for a catcher. Literally, this is already unheard of. He's already broke that record. He's broke both the catcher home run records. The home runs in a season as a primary catcher, which was Salvador Perez's record. And he's broke the record for as a catcher home runs, which I'm completely forgetting who set that record. I just had to pause to look it up because that was annoying me. Javi Lopez for the Braves. But he's breaking these records. It would be sensational if he broke Ken Griffey Jr.'s record. I'm inclined to believe he's going to break that one too. He's hitting so well right now. All month he's been locked in. He's re-locked in again after a little mini slump. He's over 8 wins above replacement on Fangraphs as a catcher. It's it is unprecedented, the season he's having at the plate and behind the dish. He's over 100 runs, over 100 RBIs, 14 stolen bases. He's got 54 home runs. I think he's, by the time that we return to Seattle, the team returns to Seattle on the 23rd of this month, I think he's going to have broken Ken Griffey Jr.'s record. I hope I'm not jinxing. I'm knocking on wood. I hope that's not a jinx. I think at the very least, he would have hit at least one more to break Mickey Mantle's record. I think he's breaking Griffey's record by the time we even face the Rockies. And then the march to 60 is in his sights. I think his little slump really set him back. And really, if he hits like 58, how different is that than 60, really? Like, it's, the difference is two home runs, but it's not that different if you really think about it. So we'll see what he does in this Kansas City series. I really think, I don't know, the offense, I think, just needs to score a million runs, because we've seen how demonic the Royals can be with making comebacks. Like, not even, I don't even, double digits might not even be enough, to be honest, really. And then Julio, I mentioned earlier, sweet, sweet homegrown boy, Julio Rodriguez. Since the All-Star break, Julio Rodriguez is tied for fourth in Fangraphs wins above replacement among all Major League Baseball players. It's Geraldo Perdomo, which I straight up did not know about before I looked at that stat today. Nick Kurtz, who's unreal, Trey Turner, and then Julio is tied with Shea Langeliers, which is pretty incredible for Shea Langeliers, but also for Julio. He has been so good, and he's not even walking. He's doing it and really leaning on his core competencies as a player, which is swinging the freaking bat and hitting the ball hard. He is on track to have a 30-30 season. Something that's holding him back is the stolen bases, which is not something you would have expected after what we saw him do the past few seasons. I mean, he didn't steal as much last year, wasn't on base as much. But he's at 27 stolen bases and 30 home runs. He is going to probably have 30 home runs, over 100 runs, maybe 100 RBIs, and potentially 30 stolen bases. His K rate on the season is down to 21.7, which would be his career best by far. He's a 5.2 Fangraphs WAR at this point, which, with potential, if he continues his torrid pace, potential to eclipse his yearly high of 5.8 that he set in 2023. But his WRC Plus is right around his career average now. So I feel like we saw him just kind of hanging out, scraping his floor all season until the second half. And then he's been, like I said, he's been one of the best players in ball. He's been, what's his WRC Plus been in that time? Not as high as fourth in WAR, but 13th overall in the league, which is still pretty great. And he's just such a gifted baseball player. And it's a reminder every season that you can't doubt a player all season who's that good. I mean, again, he wasn't even bad to start this season. He just was having a weird year at the plate. His BABIP was really low. He was still hitting the ball hard. I feel like he was chugging along with like a 110 WRC plus, which even for him as an elite center fielder who can steal bases, that's still a floor of like 3 wins a year. But I think his floor is 2024 at this point. I think we can say it. His floor is 2024, which was 16% better than league average at the plate, 25% K rate, 20 home runs, 24 stolen bases, and 3.9 Fangraphs WAR. At this point, I think that is his floor, which his floor is top 30 position player in baseball, top 40, top 50 player in all of baseball. But then right now, for his career, for these 4 years that he's played in Major League Baseball, he's basically been the 15th to 20th best player in baseball. I'm not even really backing that up with any stats. I'm just anecdotally estimating that. And I'm really quickly going to look up where his Fangraphs WAR is over this time. Because if it's like 15th to 20th, I feel like I nailed that. But he's exceptionally gifted. I feel like all year everyone, me and a lot of other people, were banging the drum like, yeah, he's probably fine. He's probably fine. And look, he is fine. Oh, look at that. Fangraphs loaded, 11th in Fangraphs WAR since the start of the 2022 season. So if you're just going strictly by WAR, he's been the 11th best hitter in baseball, which is pretty astounding. So that puts him, yeah, 15th to 20th best player, 20th-ish probably if you factor in some pitchers who are better than him at pitching than he is hitting, which is probably fair. But he, yeah, 30-30 watch. We're watching for 30-30 for what? We're watching for Cal's couple more home run records. I don't know if he's going to get Aaron Judge's record that he set, the AL home run record, but we'll see. We'll just see. Like he needs 8 more to tie it, right? 62. 8 more home runs in 12 games. 9 if he wants to break it. I mean, listen, if anyone's going to do it in these 12 games, it's going to be him. I don't even want to comment. We'll just watch. We'll just watch and see. I just think you can take it to the bank that he's knocking off Mantle and he's knocking off Griffey for those records. I'm cashing that one in. That, I think that's a lock, which, God, I can't. Oh, I don't want to come back to this podcast and regret saying that. But before, I think I'm going to take a break really quickly. And by really quickly, I might record the rest of this podcast after the first Royals-Mariners game. But because I want to talk a little bit about Harry Ford for a second, and then also chat about Colt Emerson for a second before getting out of here and just kind of letting the Mariners continue eating in this glorious month of September that it's been. But Harry Ford got called up. This was the Rays series. I don't even think I've really talked about it on the podcast that I released on the 5th, because he would have been up by then, just because he didn't make an appearance in the Rays series. He has been up since the roster's expanded. I know I at least touched on it. He has 4 plate appearances since then in the 16 games. He has been pinch hit every single time. Hasn't had a start, even against a lefty. They've given Mitch Garver the run, which, to be fair, he's been above average against lefties this year. So that's the one thing Mitch has done well. I want to give him credit for that. But it's I understood the call-up. Rosters expand. It feels like he's earned it. But then what is the point of having him on this team if you're going to pinch hit him in these spots? To be fair, he had a walk-off the other night. He walked off the Angels in that Saturday, or no, not the Saturday, my bad, in the Thursday night game. He walked off the Angels. Like, he had a sacrifice fly. So he has a walk-off and an RBI before he has a hit, which also happened with Cole Young this year, which is very funny. But, like, what is the point of having him on the team? Wouldn't it have been better to just leave him in AAA and let him continue to just hit down there for the rest of the season into the, it looks like they're going to make the playoffs, into the AAA postseason? It's so odd, and this is not a unique opinion. Everyone, I think, all the fans think it's a little odd. I mean, they're 9-0 in their last, they've won 9 games in a row, so no one's really like kicking and screaming that Harry Ford's not playing, because they haven't been losing, so there's no reason to kick and scream at Dan, like, play Harry Ford. But he's still behind the backup catcher, Mitch Garver. He has kind of played corner outfield a little bit in the minors recently, but Robles just came back. Canzone's been great, and then the other guys are going to play over him, Randy and Julio, obviously. You also are trying to shoehorn Luke Raley into this lineup as much as you can, despite him being pretty bad for all of this season. Just what's the point? You know, what's the point is what I'm asking here. Like, Mitch Garver's contract is up after this year. it makes a ton of sense to me to have him on the opening day roster next season if they don't trade him this offseason as just the main backup catcher. Maybe you get Cal off his feet slightly more next season given the season he's put in this year, right? And Harry Ford catches more than Mitch Garver did this year, still can probably DH a little bit. I just right now, it's just you get him some reps on the big league club, but it's just baffling that it seems like they didn't have a plan. 4 plate appearances in the entire month of September, all via pinch hit, is not a plan. That is a, like, yeah, sure, let's call him up. Why the hell not? We have him. They couldn't call up another pitcher. They're at the pitcher limit. I don't know who else they would have called up position player-wise. They already brought up Leo Rivas again, who's been just great, just such a little pest and so needed on a roster like that wants to be really annoying in the playoffs like this team does. Just Harry Ford, what's the point, was my main note here. It's just kind of odd that he's on this team. But again, no one's complaining. They've won 9 in a row. No one is complaining. But with that, I am taking a break, and I will be back to chat a little bit more about the Mariners and then just let them breathe for the rest of the season. All right. Audibled a little bit of an audible. I did take a brief break to do something, but I'm still recording this prior to the official beginning of the Mariners' last road trip of the year, so I still don't know what has happened in that one and won't until later this evening for me. So this will come out after the first game of that series. Hopefully they won. Hopefully they are now on a 10-game win streak. And they hopefully got the Kansas City monkey off their back. That would be nice, but I'm skeptical of anything going well in Kansas City. But the last thing I did want to chat about a little bit was Colt Emerson and somewhat of what this means for the 2026 Mariners, because the offseason is going to be fascinating, as I mentioned earlier. I think this is the potentially DePoto's biggest challenge is this offseason. There's a lot of moving parts. I think there's more money and more stakes at hand as well, because there's more money involved with some of these guys, and there's now this next wave of prospects also hitting at the same time, so there's going to be a lot of decisions to make. But this is focused on Colt Emerson. Why? Because Colt Emerson has been called up to AAA. In just a month, a little bit over a month's time, in Arkansas, he's been called up to AAA. This one makes sense on multiple levels. The main one being that the AA season's over, and I don't think Arkansas was in the playoffs or anything. So this just extends his minor league season, gives him a little bit of run in AAA and the PCL, and then potentially some postseason AAA ball with the Rainiers. The Rainiers were also just kind of short an infielder, especially with the September call-ups. I know they lost Leo Rivas, and then I want to say Miles Mastroboni's been hurt. That could be me completely making that up, but it seems like they've needed an infielder. Colt Emerson fits the bill. He's the Mariners' number one prospect now, and I feel like I've barely talked about him this season because I've been talking so much about the big league club, but he has become the number one, like clear-cut number one Mariners prospect, and he's only risen up prospect boards this season as well. He's now, I think, the MLB number 11 according to Pipeline. Yep, number 11, and I think Baseball America has him at number 12 overall. I think everywhere has him as the Mariners' pre-consensus one prospect, and it's pretty simple why. He's done pretty much everything you could have wanted from a prep shortstop from the draft until now. I mean, they took him as one of those three high school picks, and he has just hit at every level. He briefly last year upon his promotion to Everett, had a little bit of a down year. There wasn't a whole lot of power once he got up to Everett, compared to a lot of the good hitting he was doing in A-ball. But then he started off this season. Also, some of that was injuries. He had a kind of an injury reel 2024, which is also why it's pretty impressive that he's managed to rise through the prospect rankings, battling through a couple different injuries for him last season. Started this year in Everett and hit the ground running. I mean, making a lot of good contacts, walking a lot, not striking out a ton, a lot more power in his bat this year too. 11 home runs this year. It seems like he did something with his mechanics. It looks like he did something with his hands. I'm no expert, but he definitely made a couple tweaks in the offseason, put on a little bit more muscle, hitting for a lot more power. And he's only 19, which is very young for the level, especially once he got up to Double A. And now he's in Triple A as a 19-year-old, which is very young for the level. So 19-year-old shortstop, and again, doing everything you want. He played 90 games this year for the Everett Aqua Sox, which went on to win their league after he was gone, but he did a lot of that. He did a lot of the legwork for that team as well. He slashed .281, .388, .453 in Everett with 11 home runs, 58 runs, 51 RBIs, 6 stolen bases. A lot more power was a very encouraging from him this season. And then he gets promoted to Double A, and his slash line in Double A in 34 games was .282, .360, .430, which is a really, really solid slash line. Only 3 home runs in those 34 games, which is still roughly on pace with what he was doing in Everett. That ballpark is tougher to hit home runs in by everyone's account. That is a pretty, it's pitcher's ballpark. You're striking out a little bit more so far in Double A, not walking as much. Not unexpected when you get promoted and you're this young to, you know, take a little bit less walk, strike out a little bit more. But I think the Mariners have seen enough and wanted to extend his 2025 season to get him up to AAA. Why the hell not? And I think the biggest reason, on top of his bat just slowly coming along and progressing, even though it started at a good level as a 17-year-old, and it's only gotten better, but his defense is what I think has really not catapulted him up the rankings. He was pretty highly ranked when he came out of the draft, but steadily kept him as the number one Mariners guy and has now had him flirt with a top 10 prospect in baseball, almost consensus top 10, is that defense at shortstop. I don't think it's taken a hit by all accounts. Everywhere I've seen, from prospect rankers that I trust, from people within the Mariners organization talking about him, his defense has potentially gotten better at shortstop than when they drafted him. And so I think that's a huge, obviously a massive reason why he's up on these prospect rankings and why he's an incredibly intriguing prospect. Because so many prep shortstops end up, like, you see Cole Young moved to second base, that makes sense. A lot of them moved to third base. A lot of them are really good enough athletes to go play in the outfield. Shortstop is an incredibly difficult position, and the fact that he's stuck there and, like, maybe might win a minor league gold glove this year at shortstop is really astounding, especially for a 19-year-old. So it's really exciting, very exciting for him. I think some people on the Mariners are overreacting this a little bit, because I think if the Double-A season was still going on, I think they'd just keep him down there for the rest of the season. But the Triple-A season going on longer is a good excuse, again, just to get him more reps. And then likely he'll see spring training time next year with the big league club, and we'll take it from there. But a lot of people are running with this news. They're like, oh my God, he's in AAA. He's about to be in the majors soon. I don't know about that. And that's why I want to talk briefly about 2026. With this news, it brings me to, I think, the most interesting player for this Mariners offseason. It's, okay, maybe not the most interesting, but J.P. Crawford. Okay, I shouldn't say the most interesting. Forget I said that. I'm not going to cut it. It's interesting, though, is the shortstop situation, particularly just the entire left side of the infield. So you have Colt Emerson getting a little cup of coffee in AAA. He'll definitely see spring training time. I think even if he lights the world on fire, he's not making the opening day roster. I'm seeing a lot of people jumping the gun, being like, oh my God, he's going to be on the 2026 opening day roster. I don't think there's any chance he's on the 2026 opening day roster. It would shock me if he was. Because even part of it too is because he just hit his first AAA home run in his first game for the Rainiers. So there's a lot of excitement. And there should be. There should be. The Mariners haven't had... I mean, when's the last time they had a really exciting shortstop prospect this close to the major leagues? Because, like, Noel V. Marte was a shortstop prospect who was exciting, but he wasn't close to the major leagues when they dealt him. Like, you have some guys now in the org, but was it, like, Dustin? No, Dustin Ackley wasn't coming up as a shortstop, though. Kyle Seager was playing some shortstop, but even then, I don't know if it was he's close to the major leagues to play shortstop for the team. I think it was fairly clear that he wasn't going to play shortstop. Do you have to go back to A-Rod to be, like, this, like, a consensus, almost consensus top 10 guy shortstop for the Mariners? Like, someone tell me if you're screaming a name right now that I'm not mentioning. Maybe, like, a decade ago, maybe Ketel Marte? Like, who else? Drew Jackson, perhaps? But I don't think he was super exciting. Like, I don't think he was up on the prospect boards. Like, Officer Nick Franklin? I feel like also he probably wasn't. I don't think he was getting ranked highly by Baseball America and stuff. So you have to go far back to find this, but it's exciting. I just think we just got to cool it a little bit, because I think his play time on the big league Cub in 2026 is a big question mark. Like, maybe if he has another great minor league year next year, he's up later in the season. They try to figure that out. Maybe he can play a little bit of third base. It seems like potentially he might be better than JP already at shortstop. I don't want to say that for sure. Just the metrics, just they haven't liked JP for years now. They liked him last year, oddly enough, but he's been a fine shortstop. The problem is JP, I don't think it's a conversation for who's starting opening day next year, shortstop. It's JP. He's on $12 million next year. And then he's a free agent. Like, I think they just let this contract play out, let him go off into the sunset, salute him for his service, and then I think by 2027, I think it's Colt Emerson time. Next season, even if the Mariners wanted to start Emerson a shortstop next season, which would be incredibly aggressive, and I don't think it'd be a good idea. He's 19. How would they get rid of JP in an effective way? He's not a particularly attractive asset. Like, for $12 million, like, he's a good player. He's a fine shortstop. He's having a fine season. He was having a great one earlier this year. Cooled off in a major way. But is going to even out to probably, like, a 3-4 win, good, fine shortstop season. I feel like we saw his peak in 2023 offensively. We've seen his defense be kind of up and down and not truly elite for an extended amount of time. What is his trade value? I don't think you get a whole lot back for him. What teams are trading for a $12 million for 1 year of J.P. Crawford? You could salary dump him, attach a prospect, but that doesn't seem like good business. So I think the easiest solution, what they're going to end up doing, is he's the shortstop for 2026. I also think he's earned it. I don't think Colt Emerson's ready. And so I think it's worth a conversation, but I don't see any other option for them next season than to just run with JP at the start of the year. Maybe JP falls off an absolute cliff and they have to make a really tough decision in the middle of the year, and maybe Colt Emerson by then has been in the minors tearing it up again, and you call up this 19 or 20-year-old to then fill in. Maybe that's what you do. But it's still exciting. It's still exciting he's getting a look at AAA. I'm more intrigued about, maybe it depends on how his spring training goes next season, assuming he's in Arizona with the team, is do they even start Colt Emerson? Do they even start him at AAA next season? Or do they just start him back at AA, say that AAA was just to extend your 2025, you start him back in AA next year for a month, maybe he lights the world on fire in April, and you give him time in AAA. Like, that's kind of what they did with Cole Young. Cole Young they were slow with because he's also really young. I don't think they're going to rush these position players because I also don't think Colt Emerson is like a 70-grade prospect right now in their eyes. I think he looks like a potential great, like good to great shortstop all around, but not like a not like an A-Rod transcendent type. But I could, you know, he could prove everyone wrong. I just want to talk about Colt Emerson for a little bit, but it's exciting to see him already in AAA at such a young age. The improvements he's made has been great to see. So we love that. And with that, I'm going to sign off right now. And I think the next time I pod will be immediately after the Dodgers series is over at the end of this season. So Godspeed. Maybe the Etsy-Witch will have this team go 21-0 to end the year. And then I think you need to get here to T-Mobile Park for the playoffs. I think that's a must if that happens. And we'll see. Let's beat the Royals. Let's beat Houston. Let's not even make the Dodgers series matter at all for the Mariners' playoff chances. Like, going to the Dodgers series at home feeling clinched already. Let's do that. But with that, hope you have a great rest of your week. And of course, for the last time in the regular season, go Mariners.